Well, have you ever heard a passage of scripture that was more difficult to say thanks be to God in response to? But it's in the book, and it's part of the counsel of God. I warned you that today and tomorrow we're going to get a little dark, and if we're going to really get a grasp of the entire cosmos, the entire created order, we're going to have to actually think about the darkness as well and the rebellion that's happened against our God and our Maker, our Redeemer. Who was this Son of Dawn in Isaiah 14? I am not an Old Testament, a Hebrew scripture scholar. Andy, maybe Danelle could tell us more about that. Others here could. Greg? Who was it? Was it the king of Babylon to the people who were first hearing this scripture? Was it Lucifer? Was it some other historical figure? Did the hearers somewhere along the line have in mind the Chaldeans, the Assyrians, the Persians, the Medes? I mean, there are going to be oppressors everywhere in every age. And perhaps we can hear this scripture about the oppressors in our age, as perhaps people heard it about Hitler in World War II. These things are ever with us until the consummation. The victory has been secured against darkness on the cross, and finally will be done away and put underfoot. But let's think about it. I had an experience in 1966, November of 1966, that I think I've talked about here twice before. And at the risk of being redundant, and old people do that all the time, redundancy comes with the territory. At the risk of being redundant, I want to tell it again because I think it relates directly to this passage of Scripture. My mentor had driven me and two high school buddies in our senior year, Thanksgiving weekend of 1966, to Wilmore, Kentucky to have a look at Asbury College in hopes that we would go to his alma mater to get our educations. And there we met a young Bob Stamps and his dorm room. And I walked in to the dorm room, and our friend Roy was a little bit older than Bob, and so he was introducing us to his even younger proteges. And hanging there in Bob Stamps' dorm room was a portrait of Christ, Richard Hooke's portrait of Christ, which I'd never seen before. And I was drawn to it, and because in those days, all the pictures of Jesus, the portraits of Jesus, were kind of weak, like the weak gospel that Jim talked about in the presidential address, and the weak cosmology that I talked about yesterday. And the pictures of Jesus were all sort of weak and effeminate and kind of looked from another age. And all of a sudden, here was this virile, masculine guy who you could imagine him, you could imagine laughing with him, and you could imagine him doing actual hard work with his own hands. And I complimented Bob, "That is such a great picture." And Bob's response was not, "Yeah, I really love it." He just said, "I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven." If you know Bob Stamps, you know that's not an unusual thing to get blurted out of his mouth. What he heard when he saw that image of Jesus, he connected it immediately with Jesus saying, "I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven." And Jesus, if you look at that in context in Luke 10:18, what Jesus is doing in talking about the demonic and darkness, he is immediately connecting it with historical events in the present tense, very present tense, personal evil. It makes sense when you think about the one understanding of the model prayer, the Lord's Prayer that he gave us. We typically say, "Deliver us from evil." But it's probable, many scholars think, that the earliest believers heard it, "Deliver us from the evil one." And it ends abruptly there. And it was just a few years ago that it dawned on me that the doxology at the end is not in the scripture to be found anywhere. It was added much later. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory. And we would rather end that way. But the prayer ends, deliver us from the evil one. Deliver us from evil. Well, where do we get this idea? I grew up hearing Baptist preachers preach on the fall. And we always got this Isaiah 14 passage talking about referring to Lucifer. And it typically got connected with Revelation 12, where the dragon's tail sweeps a third of the stars of heaven, which stars are often connected with angelic beings from heaven. And we get this idea of the rebellion that happened, this primordial rebellion in the heavenlies. I have an idea that much of the preaching that I heard came from John Milton's Paradise Lost, written in 1667. And I can remember my first impression, my first awareness of John Milton, Paradise Lost. I had to be 10, 11, 12 years old, something like that. There's a movie made in the 1940s with Edward G. Robinson called The Sea Wolf. Has anyone ever seen The Sea Wolf? Oh, wow. You know what I'm talking about. Edward G. Robinson plays this crazed, maniacal sea captain. He's going blind and crazy at sea. And these people are trapped in hell on this ship. And he's quoting John Milton from Paradise Lost, and he's identifying with the Satan character. And I remember as a kid hearing this, and it just sending me just full chills up and down my spine. The character says, to reign is worth ambition. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. And he's just like ranting over and over and over. Let me tell you, a kid that I was, I don't know if I was in the church library or the public library. I went to the library and I found that book. And at 11, 12 years old, I started like trying to navigate Paradise Lost. And it was very formational in my thinking. But where did John Milton get all this stuff? Did he just pull it out of a hat? Did he just imagine that Isaiah 14 and Revelation 12 connected? Or was there something earlier? I'm not a scholar of any sorts, but I certainly am not on the patristics. I'd love to talk with you all who have read more of the fathers. But while the church fathers, as best I can tell, weren't prolific in writing about angels, a number of them did. Ignatius of Antioch, Clement of Rome, Irenaeus, Clement of Alexandria, Origen, Athanasius, Basil the Great, on and on. Quite a number of them, Augustine, John Chrysostom. By and large, they talked about the angelic, the function of the angelic order, the nature of the angelic order, and their various orders, the distinction of the various orders of the angelic beings. There were a few who actually talked about the fall, the primordial fall of in the angelic order. Tertullian did, Clement of Alexandria, Methodius of Philippi, Ambrose of Milan. And the common denominator seemed to be, among those who wrote about the fall of the angels, was they were buying into the first part of an ancient manuscript called the Book of Enoch, that I think is it part of the Pseudepigrapha, Andy? Yeah, the Book of Enoch, and the first part of it is called the Book of Watchers. And it's not in the canon, and I assume there probably is stuff in the books of Enoch that kept it out of the canon, and maybe rightly so. But there seemed to be quite a number who bought into at least this narrative about them, about the fall in the angelic order. Whatever the case, and however it happened, we know that fall did take place. And we see it around us. Genocide, infanticide, rape, abuse, torture, larceny, unjust wars, abuse of power in just wars, cancer, sepsis, physical deformities, mental illness, natural disasters. These things proliferate all around us. They bring us much sorrow. And if we let ourselves be sensitized to the sufferings in the world, we can't help but find ourselves in intercession, groaning with creation for the consolation, groaning in sorrow for those who suffer. But remember Bob Stamp's impression. I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. And he came to do combat. Jesus came, the prince of all, the king of kings, the very son of God, came to do combat with darkness. And he won the victory. And the final consummation will come. And the entire cosmos will not only be alive, but be seething with light and goodness and joy. Prepare your hearts for a short season of silence.